Have you been getting in with us on Luke 15 about the parables, actually three stories that make one parable? And I know that's not really super important that you say, oh, it's not three stories. It's three stories that make one parable. You know, it's just not three isolated stories that have a different purpose. They all, as you hope have seen, that they all have the same purpose. And the purpose is to answer a question that Jesus obviously heard in his travels around through the countrysides and through the cities and down by the Jordan River and the Sea of Galilee. And everywhere he went, I'm sure he heard bits and pieces and murmurings and all of those things that we people do when we get a little bit flustered about things and a little bit upset and we don't know how to deal with these things in our hearts and minds. And we can get so settled on things as if that's it and that's what God intended it to be. Yeah. And just miss God by a mile. I mean, really, just literally miss God by a mile. I don't know last week if I made any sense when I was telling you about my fireplace incident, but just to run back through that one more time, because I do want you to see this in this passage. You need to really feel this. I shared with you about building the first fire in our fireplace. We built a home in Meridian in our first fireplace. And I built a nice little fire and forgot to open the flute, you know. And, of course, the smoke started coming out in the house. And Justin and Amy, who were young teenagers then, began to cough and, you know, and I said, you know, I knew they were just bad. That was their way of saying, Dad, you idiots, you made them, you know, open the flue up, Dad, you know, we're dying in here, suffocating, you know, and quite theatrical. I don't know where they get that from. They get that from their mama. But anyway, I looked back, and when I thought about what was happening in Luke 15, I thought about that, obviously. Because it's such a great analogy to what Jesus is doing in Luke 15. Jesus is basically saying in Luke 15 that the Word of God, the law from God, the standards that God laid down in His Word were intended to be a blessing. They were intended to bless people, to strengthen them, to take them in out of the cold. Just like building the fire, you know, I'm building it because I wanted to bless my family. I wanted them to be warm. I wanted it to be a nice experience. I wanted them to enjoy it and everything. And God had sent us all of the Word and everything that was there when Jesus came in order to bless our lives so our lives would be better. But just like me, who forgotten to open the flue and we got smoke filling the house, what I intended to be a blessing ended up being a curse. Because instead of warm, nice, romantic, comfortable fire, we got choking smoke. And it was choking us instead of warming us. And Jesus is basically saying the same thing in Luke 15 to these pastors and teachers and Judaizers and Pharisees and scribes and religious folk. He was saying what God intended to be a good thing, you have taken and created a weapon out of it. And instead of blessing the people with what God says will bless their life, you end up beating them over the head with something that's intended to be a blessing because you're so hard with it. You're so stringent and strict. You are actually hurting the people. You're using it as a weapon to control them, to motivate them, to dominate them. And that's not at all what God intended for His Word and His Spirit to do in life. And so here comes Jesus and says, all right, I'm not only going to run up against that system, I'm going to destroy that system.
Yeah.
So it's not an accident that Jesus would constantly be confronted by those Pharisees and scribes, and everything he did would be an offense to them because he intended it to be an offense. He intended for them to see how ridiculous they were. And how ludicrous they had created this religious system to be that in essence, was supposed to be a mirror of Jesus Christ, who they now were criticizing because of the people that were following him. Now, make sense of that. But that's what religion does. Religion does all kinds of things that don't make a bit of sense. And look, you can be religious in any way. You don't have to be some staunch person sitting in some stuffy place talking about our Father which art in heaven. You know, I mean, you can be wild and dancing and praising and everything and be just as bound up, just as held by whatever the new tradition might be as somebody from the old way. Jesus said, you know what I came to do? I came to give you life. That's what I came to do. And I came to give you a bunch of it. And so he constantly ran into criticism and condemnation from these pastors and Judaizers and Pharisees and Torah teachers. And finally, it appears in Luke 15 that Jesus has had enough of this stuff. You know, it's like, I have had enough of this. And he says, let me tell you this parable. I want you to listen to what I say. Mm-hmm. Isn't that cute? Mike got me this. Mike Miller got me that. Absolutely. He loves his pastor. That's right. You others have a chance to make up for that. March 28th, my birthday.
Well, there's your birthday present.
Yeah. You got a chance to make up for your lack of concern about your pastor. Up here drinking out of crickly bottles for weeks and y'all just sitting there. Yeah. But anyway, Jesus confronts. Jesus challenges them with three stories that are tremendously insulting to them, really. A man with 100 sheep was the first story, and he lost one, and he left the 99 and went and found the one. Jesus was saying, I'm that good shepherd who's willing to leave those that are safely in the corral, so to speak, in the fold, so to speak, to get that one little one that is about to fall off a cliff out there somewhere.
Yeah.
See, the Judaizers and the Pharisees cared about the flock. They cared about the crowd. Jesus cares about one. And Jesus said, just like the shepherd, I love one. I count in one. One matters to me. And one of the reasons why all these people follow me and don't follow you is because they know that. They know they don't matter. It's just what happens at synagogue, and what about the offering plates, and what about the nice tapestries, and what about the ornate columns, and what about the system, and that's all it's about. And then Jesus went on to a woman, you remember her, a woman with 10 silver coins. Yeah, a poor Jewish single woman. And Jesus said, you know what I am? I'm that woman. And that alone just blew them out of the water, because women were property in Jesus' day before Jesus liberated all you ladies and said, you're as valuable as us. I didn't say, now I'm not saying that I ever thought that. I'm just saying that's what the world thought at that time. And Jesus changed all that. That's what I'm saying to you. Okay, don't be looking at. You can tell the devout feminists right now in this building, because they're the ones looking at me going. You know I'm kidding. But anyway, Jesus. So here's the woman, and she loses the coin, and she just breathlessly, she just tirelessly sweeps and turns the furniture over and looks under the refrigerator and, you know, pulls out the microwave. And I mean, she just, the Bible said, diligently searches, which implies that she turns her place upside down, looking for one silver coin. She spent actually more energy looking for the one silver coin than it probably would have taken to go out and work a few hours and earn one silver coin. You know, and Jesus says, I am that woman who wouldn't let it go. I'm that one who, when you are lost, you matter to me, and I'm going to search until I find you. I'm going to get down in the cracks with you. I'm going to sweep in the uneven places of life.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, I'm telling you, you know where God found me? In the uneven spaces of life. That's where God found me.
Yeah.
God searched the cracks and pulled us out of the cracks. And that's the kind of God is. He gets his light and he searches for you. He gets his broom and he sweeps and he hears. Where he can't even see, he just listens. And Jesus says, that's somebody that cares about you. And the people picked up on the fact that he cared about them, just like the woman who searched her house, and that the Pharisees and the Torah teachers could care less about them. They didn't search at all. They never tried to find anybody. All they ever did was criticize and condemn and accuse. And Jesus says, that's why people don't come. The kingdom of God is not like that. You're moral. I mean, don't get me wrong. The Pharisees and the Torah teachers and the church and synagogue, those were good people. By standards of our morality, they were good people.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to do right. They tried to live right. They went to church. But there's a big difference between somebody who's moral and somebody who's righteous, you know? And the difference is Christ in your life. You can be really, really moral and do all of the right things and not have a relationship with God. And on the flip side, you can be almost in a crack somewhere and have the Lord in your life. He won't let you stay there, but you can be around some. How many of you have ever had the Lord pull you out of somewhere? All right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, don't raise your hand. Some people were starting to raise their hands. I said, no. Dude, just look straight ahead. Look straight ahead. So Jesus came to the story of the father with two sons, which is probably one of the most intriguing of all because it's the longest and it gives you the most information about what happened. I mean, you start with 100 sheep, and then you go to 10 coins, and then you go to two sons. So you see how it just kind of narrows down.
Yeah.
And this father has two of them, and the youngest one comes and says, Dad, I can't wait for you to die. You're going to die one day, and you're going to leave us some stuff. I know you are because you're a great dad. I mean, the father was a great father because he had something to leave the sons. I mean, you know, when you have an inheritance, that's a good thing, right? How many of you believe your parents are going to leave you not with an inheritance, but with some bills to pay? Yeah, see? All right, Dad looks way better now, doesn't he? Right, all right? Yeah, that's right. At least he paid for his own funeral and stuff like that, right? All right. And so he, the younger son says, Dad, you're cramping me here, and I need to get away, and I can't get away without some money. And so give me my money, and you don't have to die, but give me my money and let me get out of here. And Dad gave him his money. And he had an older brother that stayed there, and the younger brother left and went wild out there doing whatever. I don't know what all he did. The Bible just describes it as riotous living. So, like most people who have money and want to live a riotous life, he had lots of friends. While the money held up, there were many friends.
Oh, yeah.
Let me just encourage you that if you come into a lot of money, come see your pastor, all right? Because I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you a lot. The first thing I would tell you is the only friends you have are the ones you have when you're broke.
That's right.
Because when you get money, your friends come out of the woodwork, baby. I mean, and they help you spend your money. Yeah, and they did. They just traveled with him, and they had a party and a good time and all that. And finally, he runs out of money, as will happen. There'll be an end someday, all right? And when the money ends, his friends end. And his friends say, we don't have any recommendations for a job. You know, don't put us on your employment form. We're not going to recommend you. You party too much, all right? So what you need to do is go down there, and there's a guy that owns some pigs, and he needs somebody to feed his pigs, so go down there and apply for the pig pen, which is what the devil does, by the way. I just want you to know that. You might be fat, happy, and sassy right now, but there's a pig pen in your future. Because when the devil's through with you, he has nothing left to offer you but the pig pen. He has no goodness, no greatness, no happiness, no joy. The devil has no happy old men. And so he pointed to the pig pen and said, feed pigs. And when he got down there, he was so hungry, imagine this, that he would eat the very slop that he was feeding to the pigs. And nobody gave him anything. And he came to himself. One of the reasons why many people in our lives don't come to themselves. Can I preach just a second here? Metal just a second. The reason they don't come to the Lord. I've had parents. I've had husbands, wives, children. All have people they love. Just as wild and out of control and burning the candle at both ends and killing themselves and abusing and drugging and everything else you can possibly imagine, and they're all concerned about it and they want it to stop, and they're begging for prayer and they want somebody to talk to them and all this kind of stuff, and you say, all right, well, how are they living? I mean, they can't have a job and do that. No, they don't have a job in years and years. Well, how are they buying that stuff? How are they eating? How do they have clothes on their back? How do they not be homeless somewhere in some cardboard box out there? You can't do that in a cardboard box. And then comes the confession. Well, I just couldn't do it. Well, that's why they're doing it. Because you're taking care of them. You are funding their rebellion. You are paying the money so that they can rebel against you, God, and everybody else. And they're not going to stop as long as you keep paying the bills. And no one gave him anything, and he came to himself. And he said, you know, my father has lots of servants, and at least they eat every day, three meals a day. So I know that I got my inheritance, and I know that I left home, and I know that I was smart and sassy and cruel and ridiculous, but I'll go back home, and I know I'm not worth being a son anymore. And he practiced his speech. He just said, all right, here's how I'm going to say it. Dad, look, I know I'm not worthy to be a son anymore. And you've got every right to just, you know, kick me in the behind and send me down the road. But please, Dad, let me be one of your servants. Will you hire me to be one of your servants? Because I'm starving, Dad. And you take care of your servants, so at least I'll have something to eat. That was his speech. He practiced it. He was going to give Dad the speech. And the Bible says when he was a long way off, which implies what? That Dad was looking for him.
Yeah.
That Dad, probably every evening, Dad went out on the porch and looked down the long road he could see down to see if he could see his son coming back, because he wanted his son back. And lo and behold, one evening, there Bubba was. Here he came. He probably said to the servant, does that look like Bubba to you? Look at that. Yeah, you know he has that little bounce in his step, a little lilt. That looks like him. Does that look like him to you? And here comes Bubba up on the... And as he gets just a little closer, Dad jumps off the porch and runs. The Bible said he runs to meet him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's anxious to meet him. He's happy, excited to meet him. Now, you do get the picture of this, right? You do know what this is talking about. This is talking about the law and grace is what it's talking about. The old law condemned people, and if you couldn't live up to the law, you had to get out, and grace gives you something you don't deserve. The dad represents the grace of God This is what Jesus came to give everybody, to introduce, is a new way of thinking, a new way of living. I know most of us would probably be sitting here saying, man, I'm telling you, when I got out there to that boy, I'd tell him something. I'm going to tell you that. I mean, I might be welcoming him and I might want him back, but, you know, at least a minute I'm going to say, let me tell you one thing. Or I told you so. You know, one of those kind of moments. But grace doesn't do that. Grace gives you what you don't deserve. And Jesus said, I know that's hard to swallow and it's hard to stomach, but that's what grace is. Now, I'm telling you, if we were living in Jesus' day and we were watching Jesus walk around with that motley bunch of renegades that he was walking around with, calling them brother and sister. and we would walk out of our church after church on Sunday and see them walking down 49 with all their scraggly self and all that. And we would look at them, and I guarantee you that we would have a lot of the same reaction that this bunch of Pharisees, scribes, and Torah teachers have. Oh, it's easy to be righteous whenever you're reading it in the Bible. It's easy to know which side to fall on when you're looking at it in black and white. But when it's really happening out there, it's much more difficult to deal with. Because it looks like everything about that is wrong, and how could God reward anything like that? That would be what we would be thinking. We would be thinking, look, we dedicate ourselves, we give ourselves, we control ourselves, we discipline ourselves, we withhold things from ourselves, we sacrifice, and that bunch out there, they last week, you know, they were laying in a ditch over there somewhere, and now they're talking about going to heaven when they die. Have mercy, is that ridiculous? What kind of cult leader is that? That's exactly what Jesus was facing, that attitude. That attitude where you say, in order to go to heaven, you got to deserve it, you got to earn it. You can't be bad, you got to be right, you got to do right, you got to live right, you got to be clean, you got to be holy, you got to be righteous. And Jesus says, no, grace. It's a marvelous concept.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why they write songs about it. Amazing grace. Yeah. Yeah. Amazing grace. How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. Yeah. And God's grace is amazing because it's shameless. And here's Dad. Dad's running down the road to meet that renegade reprobate that left and said, I don't care if you die, give me what's mine. And hugging him and putting, and the boy had practiced his speech, and when he got to Dad, he was going to give his pitiful little speech. And he started giving it. He said, Dad, I know I don't deserve to be a son, and I know I haven't done everything right. And Dad, I'm sorry for it. And while the boy's still talking, the boy's still giving his little spiel about how he doesn't deserve to be a son. He wants to be an employee. You know, one of the problems with both of these boys, neither one of them knew who they were. The young son is sitting here begging to be an employee. And the older son is mad and offended because he's being treated like one. Neither one of them know that. They're a son, man. You're in the family. Don't be upset. And you're not an employee. You're part of the family. But they both want to, you know, confess about it. But anyway, he practices speech, and Dad says, bring the ring, put it on his finger. We're going to, you know, get him some jewelry because that's our family crest there. Put that on him because he's part of the family. And get the robe in here because look at him, man, old tattered up. And that fat, and put some shoes, get some shoes and put on his feet.
Yeah.
It's rocky out here. It's bad. It's nasty. Come on, get him some shoes on his feet. And he's still sitting there saying, Dad, I don't deserve to be a son. Give him a ring. Come on, bring it. Dad's not even listening. Thank God Dad didn't even listen to what he said. Dad was giving, you know, abundantly giving. Jesus said, that's what I am. I am a father that gives to those who don't even deserve it, who haven't even earned it.
who won't even act right or be right. I'm introducing a tremendous new concept in this world of living and loving, and that concept is grace. Unmerited. And he ran into it. And that's what Luke 15 is about. It's about the clash between the people who couldn't accept that and the people who were being saved by that. And that's what Jesus came to establish. And it would be easy to stop there, because that's a happy ending. Right? The boy comes home. The lost is found. The dead is alive. Great story. Wonderful story. Man, the father welcomes him home, kills the fatted calf. They have a party. There's music. There's dancing. And everything is great. And it's a wonderful place to stop a story and end a story and make a point. The only problem is Jesus didn't stop. Jesus didn't tell stories like this. He didn't do what he's about to do right now. This is so rare for Jesus to add a postscript onto this wonderful story of redemption, which to me is the whole purpose of this thing. And here it starts in verse 25. Now his older son was in the field, which means that his older son is a worker. His older son is taking care of business. His older son is doing what he's always done. He's running the farm. He's not only not taking money from dad, he's bringing money to dad. This is a good older brother right here. This is a capable, responsible, hardworking young man who deserves some praise in life. He's a good boy. He didn't leave home. He never told his dad, I don't care when you die. Give me my money. He stayed right there with him and never left him at all. Just like religion did on the earth. And as he came and he drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he comes in from the field and he hears a sound that he hasn't heard before. When he comes in from the field, he's not coming in hearing music and dancing. So this is like something new, and he notices it, and he calls the servant. So he called one of the servants and he asked him, "What does this mean? I'm hearing music and dancing, and what's going on around here?" And let me get this thing to go forward. Isaac, y'all gonna have to help me. There we go. Uh-oh. We have a new computer, y'all, so just bear with us. Okay, here we are. All right. And he said to him, "Your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father's killed the fatted calf." Everybody say, "Steak tonight." Yeah. Hot dog. Man, we're going to have the fatted calf. That one we put up and started feeding so it would have good meat. All right. Well, none of that old scraggly, skinny, grass-fed stuff. All right. Good, plenty of fat. All right. But he was angry. The older brother was angry, and he would not go in. Therefore, his father came out to him and pleaded with him. I mean, you are seeing the Jews, right? You are seeing religion, right? You're seeing a bunch of people that are living a good life, and they've never left God, and they're staying with God, but they're bound up and they're structured, and they're not receiving the new thing that God brought on earth called grace. They're still in that old stuff, and here comes Jesus saying, "Hey, come on, man, this is new. Get with it. Come on, get in here, and it's going to be wonderful, and you're going to love it, and it's going to be great." I mean, you do see the clash of that, right? That's what the story's going on. Yeah, that's it. So he answered, and he said to his father, look at what he said to dad, "That lo, these many years I have been serving you, and I've never transgressed your commandment at any time. And yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends." And then look at the accusation here. "But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots," That means prostitutes, if you, you know. You kill the fatted calf for him. And he says, son, you're always with me, and all I have is yours. I'm not going to be able to get to all of that. I'm going to just try to get to a few little things here on your outline. The boy is in the field, and he hears the sound, and he comes in from the field, and confronted by the young son coming home. And listen, I know, I hear you. I hear what you're thinking. I think the same thing. I'm thinking that boy coming home would make anybody angry, right? I mean, that boy disrespected dad. That boy criticized dad. That boy took the money from dad and embarrassed our family name and went out there and lived like a heathen. And now he's coming back wanting to be part of the family. Never happened as long as I'm here. That's how he felt. That's how I mean, when I read it, I feel that way. I say, that boy coming back home would offend anybody. But you know what God says? Not unless you already have an offense in you. Dad didn't get offended. Huh? The servants didn't get offended. Only older Bubba got offended, because even though older Bubba had been at home all this time working hard for dad, evidently older Bubba had been developing an attitude the whole time. And when this boy comes back, this boy is just the trigger that releases what is pent up in old Bubba that he's been feeling all along. An offended spirit is what it is. Have you been angry within the last 24 hours? Oh, okay, no. About 36 hours. 48? 96. Come to the altar. Because you are full of deceit. Yeah, we all get angry, right? The character of an offended spirit deals with what it looks like. Because if you have one, you need to know it, right? Huh? All right, look at your neighbor and say, all right, if you have one, this is how it looks. All right, here we go. This is how it looks. You're going to write them in your outline. I know you'd love to do that. Number one, he was angry. How does an offended spirit look? What's wrong with older Bubba? He's offended. What does it look like? What is it to be offended? Why is it so important? Why did Jesus tag on a postscript at the end of this wonderful story about a boy being saved and found and grace coming into this world and him getting what he didn't deserve? And he just tacks this postscript on, and he doesn't even have an end to it. It doesn't even answer the question. Did he go in or did he not go in? I mean, what happened to him? Why would Jesus do this? Well, Jesus has a purpose for us. He wants us to answer the question. And answer it you will. It's up to you. What happened? Did he turn around and go back out to the field, or did he go in? Did he accept his younger brother back, or did he stay offended for the rest of his life? Oh. He was angry. If you get offended, see, I'm just saying to you, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I'm just saying you might be offended. You might have a spirit in you that is offended by a lot of the things that God is about. Or your family, or anybody. You could get offended. You could get angry with anyone. It's so easy to get angry. We spend a lot of our life angry. And we can get angry at no one. We can just get angry at an event, you know. Or something happens and, man, we just get all beside ourselves because that's not what's supposed to happen. I've boiled it down to four things that make us angry. All right, and just follow me. I'm going to get through them really quick, all right? The first one, I'm going to give you a chance to write that: disenchanted egotism. Mm-hmm. Big word. I just wanted to show y'all that I've been to college, and just so I put this up. Disenchanted egotism. Yeah, right. Do what, Brian?
What's the little word? It means the same thing.
Yeah, right. The little word means that boy is something else, man. All right. What we have here is we all have a way, right? My way. I want to do it my way. I want to see it my way. I want you to do it my way. I want you to get with me and do what I decide you're supposed to do. This is supposed to work out this way. This is what church is supposed to be like. This is what God is supposed to be like. This is what family is supposed to be like. We have a way. And disenchanted egotism just simply says, when I don't get my way, I get angry about it. I get upset about it. I get disenchanted. Yeah, simply because I don't get my way. I mean, here he comes in from the field and something's going on and this is not how it's always been and he doesn't really agree with whatever's happening and so his way is not what's happening and he gets angry because he's not having his way. You know, ladies, let me tell you one little insight, all right? This may take just a second. You got a second? All right. All right. Here we go. You living with a man that's angry, let me tell you what's most likely happening. Are you easy to embarrass? Now, I know it's crazy to ask people to raise your hand and identify yourself, and you're easy to embarrass. That's ridiculous, right? I mean, that's... But if you're easy to embarrass, I'm not easy to embarrass. In my proper place. Up here, I'm not embarrassed because I know what I'm doing and I've done it a lot and I know how to do this and so you can't embarrass me up here. But you can embarrass me and I do get embarrassed pretty easily on some things. Like you put me out on a dance floor and challenge me to dance. And I'm telling you, I get embarrassed, you know. I mean, I'll back up on you. And you know how men express embarrassment? Anger. So what I'm saying to you is many times you're seeing your man express anger. He's just embarrassed. He's just humiliated. And because it's very hard to admit that you're humiliated, it's very hard to admit that you're embarrassed and that you're, you know, you feel incapable of this. And none of us want to admit that. It's much easier to get angry about things. And because we think somehow that anger is a position of strength, which, guys, it's not. It's actually a position of weakness. But we think it reflects strength, but it really reflects weakness and gives somebody else the power to control our lives. So the next time your man gets angry, just look for what he's embarrassed about, what's humiliated him, because 9 times out of 10, that's what's happening. So anyway, onward and upward, all right, back to church, back off the psychiatrist couch and back up to work. All right, come on, here we go. So when things don't happen your way, you get angry. Lack of understanding. Now, a lack of understanding can happen because you don't want to understand. You refuse to understand. You won't accept certain things, facts, realities. And because you don't understand, like when the boy comes in from the field, he hears the music and the dancing, and he asks the servants what happened, and they say the Bubba's come home, and he doesn't understand why Dad is throwing a party for him. And not only does he not understand, he doesn't want to understand, and he's not going to understand. And so when you don't understand something, you get angry. And then the third thing that makes us angry is something new. Have you ever noticed how often you get angry at something just because it's new? We've never done it that way before. Why are we doing this? What we had was perfectly fine, and we don't need that. Who told them to do that? We did it this way all our life. I mean, you see, you're angry just because you've never done it before. And it's new. And here comes this boy in from the field and something new is happening. He's never heard music and dancing when he comes in from the field. And he just gets all bent out of shape because it's new. And then the fourth reason we get angry is when we get left out. Especially if somebody's in who we don't like. Right? I mean, you know, I don't get angry about getting left out of some things because I don't want to be in them to start with.
But if somebody that I really don't think deserves something is getting accolades and I'm getting left out, I'm hot about it. Somebody, Mike, that's good. This is really great. Somebody at work gets a promotion. They have a little celebration for them. They don't even invite you. He didn't deserve that, or she didn't deserve that promotion. You do all the work. They always get, somehow, no matter what happens, they always get credit for it. And if it's bad, I always get blamed for it. And now they're having a party for that sucker in there. And not only that, they didn't even invite me. I'm so insignificant, I don't even matter. Not only did I not get the raise, I didn't even get recognized in any way. Oh, don't tell me you wouldn't be mad about that. Yeah. So one of the characteristics of being offended is that you are angry. You just have it inside of you. It's right there to be triggered with almost any little thing. And it's right on the surface of your life. Now, what does... let me give you a second characteristic first. He wouldn't go in. An offended spirit isolates itself. An offended spirit withdraws itself from everybody. Doesn't want to be a part of anything. When I get offended, I'm checking out, right? I'm not going to family meeting. I'm not going to be there at supper time. I'm not going to participate in the family outings. I'm isolated. It's just like people who get offended at church. Man, there are people that get offended at church. We don't even know why they got offended. We have no idea why they got offended, but somehow they got offended, and they leave, and we never see them again. And we don't even know what happened. But they never. But then they go down there and talk about that church. You know? I tell you that church. Well, last time we know you were part of that church, right? So. When my spirit gets offended, I get angry, and then I won't go in. I isolate myself so nothing can be helped. And then third characteristic is he focuses only on himself. He gets selfish, real selfish. I'm going to read you a verse. Verse 29. And you be the preacher, and I'm going to read you verse 29, and you tell me what his problem is, all right? All right, we're going to check your discernment now, okay? You get to practice being the theologian here, all right? So what we're looking for is what is wrong with him? What does an offended spirit do to a person? All right, reading it. So he answered and said to his father, "Lo, these many years have I been serving you. I never transgress your commandment at any time. And yet you never gave me a kid, a young goat, that I might make merry with my friends." What's going on there? It's all about him. I, me and my. I've been here all along. You never gave me anything. I don't get rewards like that. I don't get noticed. I mean, everything is about me. It's all about me. When I get offended, everything turns into me. And no matter what somebody does to try to... I mean, listen, have you been sitting in a conversation and somebody's name comes up and the tilt sign goes off in your brain? I mean, just the mention of their name and it's ding, 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 ding. And then it just all starts raging up out of you. That's an offended spirit. Yeah, and no matter... And then when somebody else comes in and tries to straighten it out, you get all bent out of shape at them. And all they're trying to do is help straighten this thing out. Why? Because you get paranoid and everything's about you. And everybody's against you and what they're talking about is about you. And you have your antenna up and your satellite dish scanning and you're picking up clues and you're, you know, speaking different languages. And you're reading it all wrong because it's all about you. So here's the fourth one. The fourth characteristic is he begins to accuse. Yeah, he accuses his brother. I don't think I have the verse up there. I know I don't. Let me just quote it for you. This is the verse where the older boy said, it was right after verse 29, it was verse 30, and it says, But as soon, you know, he said, you never gave me a kid that I might make marry my friend. And then he said, but as soon as this your son comes home, you kill the fatted calf. With one comment, he has totally denied brotherhood with his brother and fatherhood with his father. When this, not my brother came home, but this your son, like not my father and my brother, but now he's like out here and he's accusing, and it's this son of yours came home. We do that, don't we? Sometimes, I mean, you know, we recognize how foolish that is, right? Yeah, you know, when they do something, you know, bad or goofy or whatever, you look at them and say, that's your boy, you know. Yeah, right. But this is how an offended spirit looks. All right, anybody, and don't raise your hand. Let me just say that. Don't raise your hand, but this is a rhetorical question for you. Does anybody here recognize any of these characteristics in themselves? Okay, all right, well, let's go on then, because there's good. Oh, yeah, I did have the verse there. I did. Hey, I was better than I thought. All right, here's what it does when you have an offended spirit. Why? I mean, you know next week I'm going to talk about why you have one and how to get rid of it, right? You do know that. So you do know that's where we're going. So I want you to see this week, you know, what it looks like, so you'll know if you have one, and then what it does, why you need to get rid of it, all right? Here's why you need to get rid of it. Number one, it destroys unity. Did you know in the kingdom of God that the kingdom of God operates on unity? Amos 3:3 that you got listed in your outline, that verse says no two can walk together except they be agreed. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. So God expects all of us to be in agreement, to believe the same thing, right? To go the same direction, to be of one mind and one heart and one spirit. That's what God intends. And when we're like that, God can step out of heaven, step into this church, and walk with us. But if we're not like that, if we're all divided and split up and disunified, God can't take us anywhere, because His Spirit doesn't dwell in that kind of an environment, you know. We have to be agreed. 1 Corinthians said it's not only vital that you speak the same thing, but it's vital that you believe the same thing. And I know there has to be some separation over some of the things. I think God's going to have a phenomenally hard time getting us in heaven. I just do. Because we split up over everything, right? I mean, we split up over what kind of music we want. We split up over what kind of theology we believe about gifts and about tongues and about speaking in the Spirit and about the working of the Spirit and baptism. Baptism's a big one. Some think you need to plunge them. Some think you need to sprinkle them. Some think you need to put a wet rag on the head or something, you know. And that's fine. And so we split up over everything. I'm just thinking that God is going to have like a country heaven and a city heaven and a highfalutin heaven and a lowbrow heaven and a northern heaven and a southern heaven and a redneck heaven, you know, and a good old boy heaven. I'm just thinking that He's going to have to do that to get all of us up there in one place at one time, because we are so divided over everything. But what an offended spirit does is it creates disunity where God can't be God among us, because God's Spirit does not dwell in a place that's disunified. You know, one of the things I think that draw people to Freedom River Church, I wish it would keep them here, but at least draws them, is our unity. When you walk in the door, you sense that we're together. We don't have cliques. We don't have clubs. We don't have groups of people that are separated from other groups of people and stuff. One of the great things, if you go to one of the women's events or men's events, you'll see this. You'll see everybody talking to everybody. I'm serious. You will not see the same people grouped up with the same people all the time. You will not see that. Which says, man, these people love each other. And just one other little point about this unity thing. With the same extent that unity draws people, disunity pushes people away. Nobody wants to go into a bunch of people that aren't unified, where there's fusses and wranglings and tension and stress and strife, and you got to be careful who you say something to because they might be on the other side. The other side? What other side? So if you have one of these offended spirits, then unity is in deep jeopardy, all right? Two, it destroys usefulness. This older son, when he came in from the field and he was offended and angry and wouldn't go in and isolates himself and begins accusing his dad and his brother, with all of his talents, with all of his abilities, with all that marvelous training that he has, he is now useless. Because all of his giftings, all of his anointings, all of his uses, everything else is now not with the family. He has totally eliminated himself. Isn't that a shame, really? Isn't that a shame? To be disqualified with all of that skill. What a waste. Look at your neighbor and say, what a waste. So that offended spirit, that attitude of offense that we can carry around in us, it destroys our unity. It keeps us from being used by God. You might as well, look, don't be praying, God, use me, God, use me, God, use me. Because he's not going to use you. As long as you've got that spirit inside of you that says you ought to be God. Because once you begin accusing somebody, there's no place to stop until you finally accuse God of mismanagement. Right? I mean, God created them. God's in control of that. And finally, you just come to the point where, okay, God, it's you. You're not managing this thing right. God, you're wasting a whole lot of power up there. That's all I'm telling you. If you'd just give me that power for just about 30 minutes, I'd straighten this mess out. I'm telling you that. You know? Yeah, as long as you're in the position, you're putting yourself in the position of God and you're going to be the leader of the entire universe, God's don't quit praying God use you. God's not going to use you because he doesn't use you with that kind of spirit about yourself and attitude. Number three, it destroys happiness. All right, if I have one of these spirits, unity's gone, usefulness is gone, and happiness is gone. And I think you see this all the time in your own life, because when you get offended and you get all bent out of shape and you get angry and hostile and all of that, who is the one that's hurt? You are. Right, you are. They're at home asleep, oblivious to your anger, oblivious to your schemes about what you're going to do to get them back that they will never know until too late. And you're scheming and you don't sleep good and you're tossing and turning and your adrenaline is up and you can't half eat and you're distracted from everything you're doing in life and you're being damaged by this. Your happiness is being destroyed. I put a little quote there that I've said all my life. I don't know where it came from. Somebody said it that's smart. But they said anger is like an acid that does more damage to the container in which it's stored than it does to the victim on which it's poured. And that's the truth. You know what? You know who gets hurt the worst with anger? You do. It eats you up. And Jesus is saying to a group of people who now are angry at him and accusing him, and they don't want this new thing. They don't want to understand it. They're not trying to understand it. They're criticizing it, and they're angry, and they will not engage him.
he's telling them, this is hurting you. This has got to go. Because the kingdom of God can't be built by people who won't let God have control of their life.